Hi, today is May 28th, 2023. This is Mobius Podcast 461. I'm Todd Agassaward, my good friend and a good Dr. John Small. And before we begin, I want to thank my other good friend, Paul Lawler, for actually meeting me in person. I know, what a concept. Outdoors, so that I could test my relatively new sub-$30 wireless lavalier mics. And I'm going to declare the mini podcast test a success. I mean, the audio quality isn't as good as, say, this blue nano mic I'm using, but it was okay. And I didn't use any, well, I used like minimal post-processing just to remove some noise, some silence gaps, which I do for all the podcasts. And I think, what did I do? I think I may have decreased bass and increased treble just slightly for the 18-minute mini podcast, part A. But for part B, which is only a minute long, I left it as is. So no volume modification, no treble bass modification, no denoising, nothing, just as is. So if you have a chance to listen to it, John, let me know what you think. It's not going to be as good as, you know, using our normal mics, but
It's good to have options for those sorts of things. I am more interested in your next point, because that is somewhat concerning to me about your new Pixel.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So as I mentioned the other week, I think, these lav mics, these ABS Giga lav mics, work with iOS. Well, they work with anything, but on iOS, iPadOS devices, the volume was so low, the recorded volume, that I had to do so much post-processing, it was almost not worth using them for remote, you know, outdoor type, or just, you know, not in the house kind of thing, not in the office thing. But when I got my Pixel 7a, I just out of a lark, I said, well, let's test it with this. And it was perfect. I mean, you know, perfect in the sense the volume was what I expected. Sound quality was okay. It's what I expected from a reasonably good sub-$30 wireless lav mic. But, you know, even previous to testing with the mics, and I kind of knew this because I've been reading other people write about this, the Tensor chips that Google uses to power their, or to overpower their Pixel devices to give them a bit of smarts, runs hot. And this is true for its predecessor and other Pixel devices, and 7a runs hot. It got to 104 degrees running YouTube for a couple of minutes. And I measured that using an infrared thermometer, you know, that's used for like car engines and stuff. And one of the things I noticed is that so what I did was I put we were in the shade outdoors, but, you know, kind of under a sun umbrella, sitting at a table. And so we were in the shade and we were talking, and I put the Pixel 7 on the table with its transceiver, and Paul Lawler and I were talking using our lav mics. And at the end of our 18-minute mini podcast, I picked up my phone, and it was not burning hot, but it was not comfortable to the touch. I'm going to say it was probably at least 104 degrees again, running audio recording only, not producing sound, not showing video, just probably running full tilt processing the audio. And I handed it to Paul. I said, you feel this? He says, oh yeah, that's really hot. And so, you know, you don't even have to be showing video or streaming video or anything for it to get hot, recording or doing anything that's processor intensive. And the way Android Recorder app works is it not only records sound, you know, which has some processing required of it, of course, but it also does transcription, real-time transcription. So it's doing a lot of stuff, even though the screen may be dim and you might not be seeing anything happening on the device. And it got really, really hot. Uncomfortable, I would say uncomfortably hot, you know, not so uncomfortable that I'd have to drop the phone, but it's not something I would want to hold in my hand unless I was standing in, you know, if I were back in Fairbanks in the winter, I'd probably welcome.
It would actually serve a purpose to be that hot.
Yeah. But, you know, Hawaii in the spring, almost summer, not so much. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. All the Tensor powered Pixels apparently run hot.
Yeah, that's what I hear about those. And it's an interesting thing, because the only time I've ever, on an iOS device, ever gotten it hot is when it's literally in direct sunlight.
Right, right.
And it's, you know, you realize that you've got it in the car where, you know, sunlight's coming in straight on it, and it hasn't been able to cool off or something like that. So it's very strange today, I think, for us to see modern electronics having issues like this. And it sort of is and isn't concerning, maybe. I guess maybe if you're used to it from the past, it doesn't concern you as much. But I think today, most of us are much happier with our devices running cooler, even if the devices themselves are not suffering, you know, they're adequately cooled or they're adequately able to deal with it. I do notice the most modern thing I notice with heat problems is my MacBook Pro, because I have a piece of software on it that'll actually let me control the fans. You know, normally MacBooks run their own fan management. You can't do anything about it.
Right.
And there are times when it'll run too loud. And so I will manually, tell it, chill out for a little bit and run the fans at half speed. And the irony is that when it starts to get hot, you can definitely tell the processor is powering down. It's basically, it gets slower and slower to the point that it takes you a moment to go, oh, I turned the fans down. I should turn them back up. And as soon as you turn them back on normal or full auto, they go to the max speed. So I guess we don't realize if we're okay with it getting hot, we don't realize that it's also going to get slower to keep itself from burning itself out.
Yeah, if it's smart.
Yeah. Well, and I assume the Pixels have the same sort of battery heat management as iOS would. But heat is still a thing, I guess. Even in 2023, we still worry about overheating.
On non-Apple products, yes. And, you know, I would say that, like, so right now I'm recording this podcast using a piece of software called Audio Hijack from Rogue Amoeba. And I'm using, we are using Microsoft Teams to talk. And I've got video on, you've got video on. And my Intel-based MacBook Pro will probably start to get warm in a little while. But right now, you know, we've been recording for about 7 minutes, and we were, you know, online for a few minutes before that. So after, let's say, 10 or 15 minutes, it's still running pretty cool. I mean, it's comfortable to the touch. It's about probably, I don't have my IR thermometer, but, you know, Apple knows how to dissipate heat, you know, and you know, my theory, it goes to another dimension where it releases the heat.
Well, and the only thing that can really get mine going, other than media rendering, media rendering will always do it. But is virtual machines. If I run my Windows virtual machine, and especially if it's doing updates, so it's doing a ton of, writes and things like that. But looking at what my device is apparently at right now, you know, I'm at a nice about 76 degrees Celsius inside my at CPU core right now, and that's kind of good enough for the Mac to have the fans just slightly running. They're not able to be heard right now, but they're going. They're not at their minimum. They're going.
Yeah. And I'll also say, so, you know, right now, as I mentioned, I'm using maybe I didn't mention this, right? It's a 2019 Intel powered MacBook Pro. And that it does get warm sometimes, but I also have a 2021. I mean, not too old MacBook Air M1 powered device. And that thing almost never gets hot, even when recording a podcast or, you know, streaming stuff. It's, again, there is another universe that is getting really hot because Apple is shunting all this heat to that other, you know, alternate universe where it's ultra warm. Or maybe it's a cold, dead universe and they're just heating it up, you know, to help people there.
They'll eventually start life there.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of virtual machines, I don't have it in our show notes, but I will mention a virtual machine story. So my daughter emailed me and says, hey, you know, my Parallels, which is now an annual license, you know, like everything else in the universe, you have to subscribe now. You don't actually buy stuff anymore. My Parallels license is up for renewal in July or whatever. And what do you want me to do? Because I pay for it. And so I said, well, you know, you don't really need it anymore, because the only reason we got Parallels was to run Windows on her MacBook, because her MBA program required that you run Office for Windows. I think because Excel for Office does not have macros in a macOS version. And so, you know, she needed to run macros and stuff in Excel. And I said, well, you're done. You know, I saw you at the graduation ceremony. So I said, well, just, you know, run Windows natively, the macOS version, And she says, oh, wow, I don't have to start parallels to use Office anymore. I go, well, you never really did. You know, just that your school wanted you to. So at any rate, so we're going to, I'm going to save, I don't know what it is, $60 a year or whatever. And I just paid for my renewal for Office 365. And so she's got one of the licenses and she's happy as a clam running it natively on her Mac now.
The little things that make a big difference.
Yeah. And she's running a really old MacBook now that I think about it, because we got it, I think this is a 2017 MacBook, so maybe she should get a new one after she gets back from her various internships this year. Okay, next thing. I'm kind of excited about this, because, this is Seattle Times via Bloomberg, and I couldn't read the original Bloomberg article because it was behind a paywall. It is behind a paywall, I think. But anyway, Seattle Times reprinted the entire thing. And they're saying that Apple plans, and I think we've talked about this before, but just I'm getting more interested in this now. Apple plans to turn locked iPhones into smart displays with iOS 17. You know, with my Lenovo Smart Assistant possibly being bricked when Google stopped supporting third parties, you know, smart displays, and my Amazon Echo Show 5 flickering, I've got two ill, smart displays, and I've been sort of, should I spend $500 on the Google Pixel tablet with dock? Should I get another Echo Show? You know, what should I do? And you know what? It doesn't say it's going to have iPad support, but it might not be bad to sacrifice one of my old iPhones. You know, put it on some kind of dock and plug it in. And, you know, I'm not doing much with it now except charging it once a week and updating it to use this stuff. So I don't know. Even with a normal phone, I don't know. What do you think, John? You think this is appealing to you?
It is. I like the idea of devices getting second leases in a sense. And actually something I wanted to talk about, because we've had sort of a back and forth on this in tech. And you know, there are good examples of products that can do two things. So, for example, your Apple Watch in nightstand mode makes a pretty good nightstand clock. You know, just have a little, clock there that you don't need to, especially if you have a dock that props it up.
Yep.
And we've had various tablet PCs that have done a decent enough job being both a tablet and a keyboard, laptop device. Even when they're running Windows, they can sometimes make it work. But then we've got, and we seem to be going more toward this, you know, Google's latest tablet now has the dock that turns it into a smart display.
Yep.
If Apple does this with the iPhone, that would seem to be the same route that they're going. And so I guess I find it very interesting that sometimes devices can pull double duty and they do it in a very good way.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also had great examples of devices that just can't either, you know, they just don't do it well in either way. Some of the tablet PCs, the original tablet PCs back in 2003 to 2008 were sort of that way, where the screens were great if you were using them in tablet mode, but way too small to be used as a laptop. I had an old Acer Travel Mate that I loved. It was a great laptop, but you couldn't do serious work on it unless you were with an external monitor because it was just way too small of a device. And we've got foldables now that get sort of mixed reviews. Some people really like a portrait foldable. Some people like the landscape foldables, such as the new Pixel foldable that'll be coming out. So I guess what's your thought on this? Do you want dedicated hardware for every use scenario, or do you like hardware that can double duty and one less device to own, but then it might make some sacrifices?
Boy, that's a really interesting question. I guess I have two thoughts about it. Generally speaking, I found that dedicated devices designed for that purpose are best, you know? And that sort of stands to reason, right? I mean, it's like, we're going to design this to be a smart display that's always on. It's going to have a nice speaker. It's going to have a decent screen, but not too big, not too small. It has a pretty good microphone and so forth and so on. And it kind of sits there, you know, like a toaster, and you use it when you need it. And it's pretty cool. The MSN Companion comes to mind as a failed but interesting early attempt at this more than 20 years ago. On the other hand, it's nice to be able to, as you say, reuse or recycle, repurpose devices. Maybe, you know, when they're a little bit older, and want to do less, not unlike me, and have it sit there. But I worry about some of the heating issues. You know, what is it like if I leave an old phone plugged in all the time? Is that dangerous? You know, it's not really designed to be, you know, not designed to be in that state all the time, always plugged in. Although even the newer old iPhones, I guess, do smart charging, adaptive charging. So they'll probably learn about when to charge itself up and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. It's a tough one. And also there's a cost factor, right? I mean, like I couldn't recycle my iPad Pro. I mean, I can't use it as a smart display, I guess, but my 2020 maybe iPad Pro, I couldn't get a trade-in for it because there's a green line during the screen, which I reported during his warranty period and he wouldn't replace it for me. So I'm kind of hoo-hooed about that. But you know what? It doesn't bother me. The green line, the little 1 pixel green line just doesn't bother me. And I still use it for, you know, all kinds of stuff, carrying around the house and playing YouTube videos while I'm doing stuff or whatever. So I don't know, John, what's your preference?
Well, if it can do 95% of what I need it to do, I like it being double duty. If it's way too difficult in a sense where it just isn't going to, it's too much of a compromise either way, then I do think that making the use of things when they otherwise wouldn't be used, so an iPhone being a smart display when otherwise just going to be sitting there charging, makes a lot of sense. Also it makes us have to rebuy docks that now show us our phones when we're charging them, you know, instead of laying them flat. So it's something I'll be curious to see if they're able to do. I would love to see it for across all iOS devices.
Yeah.
You know, iPads, iPhones, and even, Macs when they're locked. They don't, you know, it's just a screensaver or something like that. It'd be nice to have a display that at least passively showed information that was non-proprietary, confidential, or, you know, sensitive information.
Right, weather, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Incoming news. Yeah, it'd be perfect for that. Yeah, so I'm going to wait for WWDC. I'm holding off buying the Pixel tablet because I really don't want to spend $500 on a Android tablet. And as much as I like Android phones, I do not like Android tablets because I think they just aren't there yet. And I don't want to spend $500 on something I might not like. So I'll wait to see what Apple announces, if anything. And you know, they've been doing some really interesting reuse cases, like using, well, not reuse, but additional purposing, like, you know, using an iPhone as your webcam and things like that, all right, which I think is pretty clever. I haven't tried that yet, by the way. I know our friend Sven has done that with us for podcasts. So WWDC is only a week away, I think, right?
Yeah. It'll be
a
little over a week.
Yeah. And so, you know, like I can save my $500 and wait to see what happens or what's told, and then wait to see if anything. And then I guess iOS, whatever it is, 17, it will not be available till September, October, I assume. So, you know, just be patient.
Do you want to go with the betas?
You know, and on a phone I don't use as a phone anymore, that might not be a bad way to use them. You know, something I'm just charging every Friday. Every Friday I charge all devices that I didn't trade in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now that would have a purpose to charging them. One tip for people with phones, or even with iPad mini. If you're looking for a cheap functional stand for your phone, especially, and you don't have one of those fancy cases that becomes a stand up for your phone, it's not a dock, but you can find a stand for your phone by buying a business card holder. I prefer the metal ones, but I'm sure wood and other plastic, maybe plastic might be too light, but I find that the business card holders, for those of you who remember what business cards are, they're little pieces of paper, thick paper, about 3x2, maybe 3x1.5. They're not very big. They fit in your wallet, that people used to give to each other when they saw each other in person in the office, which I guess a lot of people don't do anymore. And these things are just perfect for putting your phone on, especially in landscape mode. So there you go. There's your tip. It's probably under $5 for a very functional stand that even if somebody steals, you don't really care. Not the phone, but the stand, you know, because those little things disappear. Okay. Next thing. You know, Windows backup is almost an oxymoron, right? Because have you ever had a successful restore using Windows backup at all from anything?
Many, many years ago, maybe, you know, Windows 95 era, I think I backed up files to a floppy disk and then restored them. But that's been about it. I've never tried it since.
Like a system, right? You never done a system restore.
I mean, system restore never worked exactly the way I wanted it to.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah,
Yeah. And whereas, you know, the macOS Time Machine, although it gets a bad knock from some people, but for me, it's worked perfectly. I've only had to use it once or twice when I've had like a system board failure and I had to restore to a, you know, repaired device. And more importantly, the cloud-based stuff that Apple does for their iOS, iPadOS works great, generally speaking. But Windows has never had a good backup restore solution, or in fact, one that's even functional, let alone good, just something, one that works. So now, according to Windows Central, among the top five announcements from last week's Microsoft Build, is their number four is Windows 11 is getting cloud-powered OS backup and restore. And so I only have one Windows 11 device because nothing else I have can be upgraded. And the only one I have that is running 11 is I bought it with 11. So I'm looking forward to this, especially since, you know, it's one of those little mini NUC type size devices that's, you know, barely the size of a coaster. I'm looking forward to having this as a backup option, especially if you have, you know, a terabyte of storage in Windows with Windows Office. Well, what did they call it now? Windows 365, Office, whatever they call it these days, something 365.
I think it's just Microsoft 365.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's right. Windows 365 is a cloud-based Windows PC. They're the virtual PC in the cloud. Yeah, Microsoft 365. So I'm looking forward to having something that might actually work, you know, versus just what I've always done before is to reformat, rebuild, or, you know, get a new PC and just manually rebuild it, install software, copy files from a USB SSD drive, a hard drive, or thumb drive, or something. It's something easier. Do you still use Windows devices? I think you used to have a Surface at work.
I have a Windows virtual machine. That's about it.
Okay. So I still have, actually, I have an old Windows Intel. Well, actually, yeah. Intel device running Windows 10. Oh, wait, I have a notebook running from 2019 running Windows 10. None of these can be upgraded. And like that small NUC device running Windows 11. So I've only got one device that can use it. I was thinking of replacing my old desktop with the prices and size of new Windows mini PCs are amazing. Simply amazing. If you haven't looked at that space recently, John, they're getting down to the size of a matchbox, a functional matchbox, I should say. You know, you just plug in a keyboard and display and mouse and you're off and running. And they're like $150. It's just amazing. You know, alleged power users will sniff at it with its, you know, mere 8 gigs of RAM or whatever. And, you know, non-powerful CPUs. But for stuff I do, it's great. You know, just kind of noodle around and see what's going on. So I'm looking forward to this. I'm probably going to replace my old mini tower PC with a little mini PC pretty soon because it's getting pretty cranky lately. It's getting really slow. I've had to do things like go into Windows config and tell it to only run malware scans when it's idle for, you know, 1 hour versus as soon as it powers up or comes back from sleep. Because it was taking 10 minutes for it to get down from nailing disk I/O at 100%. Which meant I really couldn't use the PC for 10 minutes after I woke it up from sleep, or worse, powered it up. So, yep. So number four, Windows 11 getting cloud-powered OS backup restore. Not sure when this is going to happen. Now, Microsoft is very slow at actually releasing stuff after they announce it.
Well, and if you're curious about numbers, the other numbers, one, AI, two, AI, three, AI, four, cloud backup, five, ARM devices get a big boost.
Which I don't care.
So, yeah, 3/5 AI.
Yeah.
What Microsoft Build wanted to highlight.
And Windows ARM, which I don't care about. Because it can't run. You know, that's the other thing, right? And to go on my mini rant, When Apple changes processors, when they went from the PowerPC-based Macs to the Intel-based Macs to their own M1, M2-based Macs, all the software ran, right? I think, unless it was maybe some old 32-bit thing more recently. But basically, you got a new machine, it has a completely different processor architecture, and as an end user, you just don't care. It just runs.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft has no idea how to do this, right? Starting with going from Windows Mobile 6 to Windows 7, whatever the heck, what is it called? Windows Mobile 7?
Windows Phone 7.
Windows Phone 7, thank you. And all of a sudden, 100% loss of applications. There was nothing third party that we could carry over from Windows Mobile 6 to Windows Phone 7. And at that point, I said, well, why am I even using it? I might as well just get an iPhone if I have to redo everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was just what I ended up doing. And this Windows for ARM thing is the same thing to me. I mean, can you run anything third party from an Intel type architect? I don't know. I don't think so. I know that was the case when I bought the god-awful Microsoft Surface RT many years ago over 10 years ago now, in 2012, which I thought was kind of going to be like a Chromebook, basically Internet Explorer. But then they stopped updating it like soon. And it became just a really flat doorstop. So anyway, not excited about Windows ARM. The AI stuff is interesting, but it sounds like this, like Windows Copilot's not going to be available for a while. Or if it is, it's to like select enterprise customers, which I am no longer one. And so nothing exciting for me. Although I do like their integration of ChatGPT and Bing. And I have been recommending that to people to use Bing just for that one thing to play with it.
Yeah, I've been using Bing AI just to play with, but that's about all I've noticed that is useful to me from Microsoft right now. The other stuff looks cool, but who knows when we're going to see it.
By the way, since we're talking about AI and ChatGPT, did you read the article? I don't have a link for it, but it just brought it to mind. I read it either yesterday or earlier today about I think it's an attorney who had ChatGPT write something for him, and the legal references, whatever you call those things, were like totally bogus, but he didn't actually fact check his own, ChatGPT output, and so he got nailed for it. But at any rate, not real good, not real good at all. You do need to fact check stuff, folks, even if it's, maybe especially if it's coming from a computer. And especially if it's coming from an alleged large language model, alleged AI. Mm-hmm. I'm still not convinced it's AI. I'm glad they're calling LLMs.
Yeah, I think LLM is a better term for it, but who knows what the actual correct term should be these days.
Yeah. Of course, once it achieves sentience, I'm sure it'll correct me.
Yeah, it'll just tell you.
Yeah, like, no, you're wrong. I am aware. I am aware of you. Stop talking about me. Anywho. So I going back to the original earlier topic, I'm really still thinking about how to do these outdoor recordings. Again, I don't think you had a chance to listen to it, but when you do, one of the things you'll notice, by the way, John, is that it pretty much obliterates ambient sound. Which I was surprised. I guess maybe I shouldn't be. But I guess the microphone itself only picks up within, a couple feet, which is what you would expect of a lav mic, which means having two lav mics, we were probably about 3 or 4 feet apart and sitting on a table. That means there's no echo, right? Because it's not picking up, the voice twice or something within a short distance. But it wasn't picking up the ocean sound, didn't pick up people walking by talking. It didn't pick up the wind. And it was about a 20-mile-an-hour breeze, constant breeze. So it's, not exactly windy, but let's call it breezy. And there was even a boat that passed by, kind of a tour boat kind of thing, went around the bay. So it didn't pick up, I think, any of that. There was a floating dock about 40 feet away that was kind of squeaking as the waves were tossing it, just not tossing it, but, bobbing it up and down. And it was squeaking like maybe you might hear a tropical bird or something, but it was pretty loud, but that didn't get picked up. But I kind of want ambience. An outdoor recording. So I may be saving my retiree nickels and dimes and picking up, one of those Tascam or other well-known portable audio recording devices that, you know, people use to do, like people who are birders, for example, they go out to record bird sounds and things.
So, I did have a fun, quick one this week. I was listening to Apple News and they had a story about how bird song is supposed to be emotionally and psychologically healthy to listen to. And so they were playing bird song during the audio story, you know. And I was outside walking at the time. And a couple of times I had to pause it to figure out if I was listening to a real bird or a fake bird. And it was about 50-50 because I had transparency mode on
right.
my headphones. So I'd be thinking, oh, that's an interesting bird. Is that a real one here? And I did pause and yep, it was a real one. And that's another interesting bird. Oh, oh, that one's on the recording. But it was virtually impossible to figure it out without starting and stopping the recording to know which was real and which wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, by the way, I read that article too, and I found it very interesting. You know, I spent much of my working career in like bunker type situations, often windowless, often underground, you know, dark and dreary and not a lot of fun to be in. And so I did things like I put in my last office, I put up a large paste up window that looked, looked like it was looking outside through a wooden window with a giraffe looking in. Among other things. And in the past, I even bought environmental sound CDs back before we had, like, you know, MP3 players with a lot of storage. And I remember putting a CD player in my office with some speakers, and I would put in a kind of a moderate, low moderate volume, you know, sounds of nature, like birds and water flowing. And although some people said it made them want to use the bathroom, so I didn't do water flowing as much. Water flowing and wind, and most people enjoyed it. They'd come in, oh, this is kind of nice, having these little outdoor sounds in otherwise sad and depressing bunker.
Yep.
But any rate, John, I know you are off to a secret, super secret mission, and so next Sunday I'll figure out what to do. I might go do a solo outdoor podcast or do some more microphone testing.
And then the week after, I should be back and we can talk WWDC.
WWDC, indeed. I'm looking forward to discussing that with you. I think it's going to be a lot of, definitely a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the announcements, especially if they announce something that makes my older iPhones, but that's still running. I guess they have to be updatable to the newest iOS this fall. Maybe it won't be as much fun as I thought. Alrighty, I will talk to you in 2 weeks. You take care.
Yeah.
And thank you, everybody. This has been Mobile News Podcast 461.